by. I sit here alone and I wonder why. Friday night and everyone's move. I can feel the heat, but it's been heading down. I swear to God, I'm beating this thing down.
Commercial or what?
This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Pill Eater, Charles Lincoln, Count Fosco, and Craig Langley Jr. We're going to be discussing the films Clueless and The Babysitter with Alicia Silverstone. Great talking to you guys.
Hey there, Robert.
Hey, Robert. Good to talk to you again.
Hi, Robert. So, from New Orleans.
Hey, Charles. So our last show, we were talking about the film The Crush, and I think there's a few important things to mention that we didn't touch upon. One of them is that in the original film, it was based on a true story, and the girl it was based upon, Darian Forrester, sued, so they changed the name to Adrian Forrester. So there was an original version of the film that was put out in theaters, and it was edited later on for TV and DVD. I was also listening to this interview with Alicia Silverstone, and she was talking about how in The Crush they edited out a few scenes. There was one scene where they were in the pool together, and he was flirting with her, showing interest. And then the scene where they were making out, they edited it down to make it much shorter. And what she was saying in that interview is they wanted to edit it to kind of take away his signs of interest in her and make her look more psycho. That's what Alicia Silverstone was saying in the interview.
Interesting. Prejudice against men manifests even in how they want to prepare. Prepare the plot, huh?
Oh, I don't know. There could be any number of explanations for that. There might be some kind of behind the scenes explanation. Maybe they just
I think it sounds to me like they really wanted to create they wanted to play down the realistic interplay there. I doubt if there's a non-programmatic explanation for it. I mean, it's probably not that they just needed to shorten the movie or something.
Huh.
I'm actually watching The Babysitter right now. I hadn't had a chance to watch it before. Before we started, and I just started it a little while ago, and Babysitter is very realistic too, and The Crush, and this one is probably the most realistic, followed by The Crush, and least of all is Clueless.
Well, in The Babysitter, what's interesting is her character is just this babysitter. It's more about it's about the fantasies about her rather than her herself.
I really like the use of the kind of internal dialogue almost that was on display in the characters in The Babysitter. They all had their own little fantasy about her.
Yeah,
I thought that was very well done.
Even the little boy she was babysitting, that scene was funny.
They all saw her in a different way, and That I think was definitely, I guess, just artistically, I would say that made it better than something like American Beauty.
Better than American Beauty? How so?
You know, Robert, there's also a, I think it was a few years ago, there was that cheesy movie called Vamps with Alicia Silverstone. I think it might have been the same. They're the same actresses in Clueless or something like that. A few years later, they would do that. And I don't know, it's just this strange kind of thing with the vampires.
Oh, I didn't see it, but yeah.
I don't know. I just think like in a different universe where you have those same set of characters, and then there are basically Clueless seems to be an earlier version of Vamps, and Vance being a futuristic vampire version of
this. Have you seen it?
No, not really, but I remember it. And just briefly looking over Clueless and then saying on the Wikipedia on the legacy, it says Heckerdling, the same director, Amy Heckerdling, would join up again with Alicia Silverstone and Sean for the vampire comedy Vamps.
Hello. Sorry about that.
All right. Awesome.
Okay. Craig Lindley Jr. is here.
Sorry about that. Got held up in traffic because of an accident. One of the modern perils of modern life.
You okay otherwise?
I'm fine. Yeah. Sorry about that.
You said you had an accident?
No, I wasn't in an accident. I got held up because somebody else was in an accident.
Oh, okay. Speaking of vampires, I don't know if you realize this, Robert, but tonight is actually the 20th anniversary of the premiere of Buffy the Vampire Slayer in 1997.
Oh, really?
Did you know that?
Sarah Michelle Gellar. Mm.
Oh, yeah.
I was on a dream.
Dark hair in Cruel Intentions.
Yeah, that's where she looked best.
Dark hair and Cruel Intentions.
I noticed that in Clueless, Alicia Silverstone, her hair color is a lot lighter, because in The Babysitter, she has that kind of a dark, like really dark blonde hair.
Yeah.
Think very, about very that, blonde. Actually. But it's funny, now what you showed me when that one Batman movie with Silverstone, I think people have said she gained weight in that film, but I think the weight's actually good on her. You know, a lot of people are obsessed with like slim stick figures. No, I think some girls that put on some weight actually do look attractive. I think it's for Alicia Silverstone's case. I do think a nice voluptuous weight looks good on her.
Great. Do you think she was? Yeah, I mean, do you think she was voluptuous in Clueless?
Because yeah, like I mean, there's some. I mean, she had a nice figure, but then when you tell me, you know, when she was in the Batman film, obviously they're making fun of her weight, but it's like, no, I think the weight is a part of the her character, or at least how she can be, you know, beautiful on screen. You know, a lot of people. I mean, I'll be honest with myself. I mean, I've dated a couple of fat girls who think they're like beautiful, all it, right? There's this like one YouTube video online about fat girls, what they say to make themselves hot, and they're like, "Ooh, a black guy was hitting on me the other night," or like, "Does this, oh no, I'm just eating. Guys like it. I actually have big boobs, they're not just fat." And they're like these cheesy, real things that fat, like white blonde girls will say to themselves to make themselves look like they're pretty big tit blondes, when in reality, nah, it's just fat. You know, you could tell the difference between fat tits and like actual healthy tits. You know, it's a real thing.
Much sharper.
I think my comment last time was that I thought that Zaptig.
Oh yeah, Zaptig. That's voluptuous.
That's sort of. Yeah, but I mean, in a very pleasant way. I mean, she's not a Twiggy by any stretch of the imagination.
How did guys find her attractive back in the day? Can some of the older guy? I might be the older guy here, being born in '83, but I never understood the appeal of Twiggy. She just looks so terrible.
I don't know. I don't see them as like attractive, really. It's kind of like a weird thing. I mean, I'm very picky when it comes to like girls I like. Maybe it's just because everyone has different appeal, but it's like if you ever had like a, like you might be in your dad's garage and your dad has a calendar of like Hooters girls or like model girls. They're not like sexy porn actresses at all. They're just like healthy, fit women in like bathing suits, and it's like not erotic, but it's like healthy or modeling, and some guys go, "Oh yeah."
You're talking about like a Playboy or just a generic.
No,
magazine?
Like Playboy, there's at least like erotic stuff to it. You know, I can never find like a masculine guy who works at the construction company and then looks at like these like big haired Hooters girls, or at least in like, or like these typical calendar girls, and like, because there's like hardly any eroticism to that. Now comparing that to like with like films, you know, there's like the aesthetic of, you know, some of these girls that look pleasing, but it's like, I guess what I'm trying to say is I love like raw, like big tick, sexy porn actresses in films, you know, that are like cause sexual stimulation, right? If the girl is not causing you sexual
stimulation. I thought you
like Gonguru. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I think Clueless is a good film in a pleasant way, but I don't think, personally, I don't think there's any like boner girls, right? I don't know if you would claim there's any boner girls in Clueless.
I would beg to differ.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm asking. I'm asking, which girls did you find?
Well, I was reading an interesting blog post saying how kind of body part preference has historically tied to like your social class. So with the blog post, I forget who wrote it, but the writer was claiming that the upper class have traditionally been interested in legs on women.
Ah.
Like the working class whites or lower middle class white men are really into like big tits. Mm-hmm. And then black and Hispanic men tend to be more into like booty.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
I guess that's definitely.
Yeah.
I can add an anecdote to that if I can. I know if I send this podcast, I've sent others with other people that at my job, I'm the only white boy there in the back. And it's a labor job. And excuse me. And there was this girl working with us from the front in the back with us. And she's got she's very much an athlete type, but she has the big butt. You can tell she does a lot of squats. And then one of the guys comes and she's like, "You know, Craig, what do you think of her compared to this other girl?" And it's like, I like the other girl, but, you know, I'm a white boy. I like those little tight white girl. Oh, they're just like, "Oh, come on."
You know, it's weird too. It just reminds me about the sexuality thing. They often will try to make the Disney princesses like sexual objects, right? You know, it's like there's the least sexual attractiveness, especially if Disney princesses, right? I mean, I'm looking at pictures online and there's these like cheesy stuff on like Cosmopolitan where it's like Clueless reimagined as Disney princesses. And I'm like, God, I remember this one time I was in like a communications class and this one girl was like showing live action Disney girls what they'd be like in college or high school. And, you know, I only found the Asian chick hot, but, you know, then again, it's like the same thing as like, you know, if you were to have like a blonde hair, it's really hard to imagine like Disney princesses or like that aesthetic, because it's like there's this perceived notion of, yeah, they're pretty princesses compared to if they're really sexy IRL, you know?
Yeah, well, in Clueless, she does have that like short skirt where she's going around showing off like her legs and her ass.
I'll show you the picture right now, Robert, and you know what I'm talking about. After shit, okay. Fat girls who think they say shit. That's a funny video.
I must have been in upper class in my past life because I'm a legs guy. That's why I love Taylor Swift. I love the long legs.
Yeah, actually, me too. So I don't know if I could ask a question from Robert. Why do you think, what do you think the origin of the breakdown is between legs for the upper class, breasts for the working class, and booty for, I guess, the underclass? Or what do you think the origin of that is?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Can I make a comment?
I mean,
I'd like to interject an anthropological perspective here. Do y'all know what Venus figurines are? Do y'all know what Venus figurines are?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's emphasized in those?
The ass and the boobs
and the legs and the face are basically invisible. And so the most primitive of all sexual objects are basically the ones that focus on.
Some of them don't even. The earliest ones, they don't even have heads or like headless. They're just like.
The heads are like covered up, basically.
I think
in a lot of
Silverstone looks good because Charles, you can't tell.
I guess you'd say that those of us who prefer legs, we are just really weird. We're just not primitive.
I'd say we're more advanced. My suggestion is that the focus on the ass is the most primitive of all sexual body parts, and after that the focus on breasts, and those who focus on the legs and the overall shape, we are the true aristocrats, the modern elite of sexual connoisseurs.
Yeah, I think Silverstone looks good because it's not that much boobs, not that much ass. It's kind of like a medium where it's like she has a kissy kiss face where you just want to make out with her. I think that's what makes her really good.
Hmm. Maybe
her face and her legs. She's pretty much perfect. Yeah.
I like those scenes in Clueless where she's jumping around her home with that short little skirt.
Yeah, I just sent you that picture too. I think.
I also like the scenes where she's getting a massage and you see like her back and it's like slowly moving down, but then before it gets to her ass, like they cut off. Oh no, there's a towel around her ass.
I forgot about that. That's funny.
Well, I was going to make the comment, when you're talking about a Silverstone, not too much ass, not too booch, and then we're talking about legs, couldn't it be like a symmetry thing in the fact that you have a girl and she has perfectly proportioned boobs and ass, like the big ass and the big boobs are out of proportion, so it's like kind of haywires the superior mind, if I'm using a terrible phrase for that, if you know what I mean. Like, we all like it together.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I could go back originally, you were talking about Cruel Intentions, and it's like the girl that has not too thin. I would say that I think Reese Witherspoon has a great body in Cruel Intentions.
Oh yeah,
that would be one to use.
What do you think about the Clueless TV series that was like a cheesy like spinoff?
Oh yeah, I remember that. That was kind of cheesy.
Yeah, because it's like they try to emulate at least what happened in Clueless, but try to franchise off it or something weird. It's like if those Geico commercials with the cavemen, and then they try to make the cavemen series. It's like, you know, it's like this weird series of events where it's like, all right, the movie is that good, let's do a show. And the show becomes like this obscure gem, and like either you love
it. Yeah, I remember like my sister watching that when she was little. I don't know. I don't think it was so great.
Well, they did that a lot in the 90s. They did that a lot of cartoons, like the Dumb and Dumber cartoon and the Mask cartoon, if you remember those.
Yeah, yeah. And there was everything from. Or it's like RoboCop, right? You know, RoboCop being violent, like him snorting, the boss snorting cocaine with like hookers. Then it's like the cartoon; it's like all kiddie and fun, you know.
Yeah.
So with that film, The Babysitter, I think what's interesting is that it's sort of a precursor to American Beauty, but it's a lot more realistic. But the whole focus is these like dream sequences of her in the shower, and I just love the kind of gradual build-up, like, where she's, like, gradually doing that whole... It's like a striptease, but it's very slow. I mean, she's never done any nudity in a film that I'm aware of, but it is very, very sensual, just her lying in the bathtub covered in bubbles, like, her facial expression, and then the scene where the guy kind of, where she just sort of, like, awkwardly lies in the bathtub, followed by her, like, cheeky smile. And then the guys are, like, trying to, like, spy on her.
Yeah.
Kind of like in The Crush with the closet scene. But you also have to remember, she never did movie in the film, but she did that great, that hot PETA photo where she's naked from behind.
Oh, that was pretty recently. That was the one to protest Wool.
Well, it makes sense since she's against. Well, I was going to say, do we think there's fur on the front since she's against wearing fur?
Oh man, I would just. That's something really to really you want to imagine. Yeah.
I love when Silverstone grits her teeth. I noticed that's a new thing. I'm just watching the film over again, and it's like this weird like gritting of the teeth where she like, I mean, there's some pictures of her doing that. She does a lot of body motion. Like she's all like confused.
Well, she does the thing with her frown, like it's like a frown, like kind of, yeah, like she's a very body frown. Movement.
Yeah, you don't see that with much actresses. She does it a lot in her face, like and gets very photographic looking at her. Just
so I don't know. We think the hair below matches the hair on top.
I mean, it has to if she's a real blonde.
Well, not necessarily. There's plenty. I mean, there's plenty of blondes with dark hair down there.
Oh, you're saying that the vagina hair might be blonde?
That's so blatant. Yes.
There's no hair. No vagina has ever had any hair in it. You mean the
every time I saw a girl naked, they had their vagina shaved. But I don't know if girls are still into hairy vaginas. I don't know. It's like the 70s. Oh,
but
thing,
it was
right?
Maybe it was different back in the 90s when those films were made.
It's like,
you know, no. There's actually been a I don't want to say a study of this, but you could actually point to the fact that pornography, they shaved it because they thought it looked better on film. And once pornography exploded, the girls started shaving like in the porn actresses that they thought it was attractive.
And just, I had this a sexuality class where it's true. Like guys will basically shave because they think like pubic hairs, like there was the 70s or 80s bush. It was like funny to have like huge pubic hairs and a dick, you know.
But there was also a transition period. There was like the 70s, like full bush. Then there was a kind of bikini wax line, which I think that was probably became popular in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And then
the airstrip in the 90s.
Oh yeah, the air landing strip, and then like the full. So I don't know, like if we're gonna be like, if what's the next future trend? Who knows?
See, I can be gross because we were talking about that. I always remember another late 90s movie, Booty Call. If anybody's seen it, it's a black comedy where the guy, he's about to get, he's in the hospital and they screw up his records. They take revenge on the one guy to teach him a lesson. And so they're going to get him cut down there. So the guy shaves it off. And afterwards he pulls up, he's like, he's all shaved down there. So there's no guy has no beard. He's like, you're looking like a popcorn shrimp right there. I just like that. Just hilarious. That just stuck with me. I've never been able to do it since.
But whenever, like now, since we're on such a lowbrow topic, when I see the babysitter, I always just like want to like see all the like soap suds like dissolve and like see that like, you know what?
You know what?
Boy. So, do you want to talk about the plot of Clueless?
Yeah. Well, for
is
what?
There a plot? No, I'm just joking.
Well, it's like, it's a lot. Well, people probably know Mean Girls, you know, and that's
right.
The typical girls feisty over. And yet, at the same time, Clueless does have this cult following because it's a vintage prep, gives kind of that high school, college-age girl the power of we can do girl drama when we want. And I guess that's why I always think like Clueless is a good film for motivating girl drama in some strange way.
Oh yeah, we got. I don't know who's old enough to remember. There was girls loved that movie when it first came on. It was girl drama everywhere, just like in the movie, like As If and all that kind of weird stuff.
Oh yeah, like she plays the kind of stereotypical LA Valley girl.
Yeah, that was the big thing back then. Was the LA was the Valley girl thing? And I'm too old now. I don't know what high school girls are into now, but that was the big, you know, personality you wanted to take on back then.
I mean, people don't really use that term Valley Girl anymore, but I guess it's been kind of planted by
the new
whole,
Valley
like,
Girl
reality.
Is pretty much the blue-haired feminist, I would
or
argue.
Like the reality TV wannabe types.
Yeah, it's weird now. It's like everything is now like feminism is in, and that's basically like you see these old memes like the blonde-haired cheerleader was the bad guy. Now today the bad guy is the fat blue-haired feminist or like the upright who was supposed to be a blonde-haired cheerleader but because of the culture Marxist system tells him is like the preppy teacher's pet so-called feminist, right? It's pathetic really. Mm-hmm. And it's sad.
Pillater, do you want to like read that thing I sent you?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's funny when you were showing me about why she was growing up in it was Santa Barbara, right? Or somewhere in San Francisco.
No, the Bay Area near San Francisco.
Bay Area. She said that Silverstone grew up in an upper-middle-class family in the San Francisco suburbs of San Clara's and Hillsburg's. She believes there's a big difference between the environment of her high school at Beverly Hills and her portrayal in Clueless. And, well, here's what she says, okay. Because Hillsborough's is quite affluent, a lot of kids who attend San Mateo High are very rich, she said. But the great thing about the school is it's really a combination of every race and religion is represented there. So you're totally blind to whether one person has money or not. I personally was sort of a swimmer. I had black friends and Spanish friends, but my boyfriend was Chinese. San Antonio is not as clicky. That's really, that's even funny because if you think about it, it's like Asian male, Israeli Aryan female, which is like the most rarest thing ever. But it's like
extreme. I don't know. I mean, that's extremely.
That's like rare Pepe rare. Stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly. She's basically. Oh, go ahead, Charles.
No. I didn't really have a comment. It was, I'm not even quite following what y'all are saying too well. This is Alicia Silverstone's comment on that she had a Chinese boyfriend.
Yes, that's the issue. Yes. Well, she claims and she's taking pride like it's diversity and stuff. But the weird part is like, wait, a Chinese boyfriend? Are you sure you don't want like? You know, you ever hear like, I have a black boyfriend. Nah, she's into Chinese men, I guess.
Well, has this man ever come forward and talked?
Nah, it looks like it's a gossip or it's some kind of, but she said it, so whatever.
It was some article posted about when the film came out. I think it was the SF Chronicle. I'll post a link to it. She was talking about, I guess, the kind of perception of the culture of LA, the culture of Beverly Hills, and like where she grew up, and that the area she grew up in. I mean, I've driven through it plenty of times to go to San Francisco, and I know it's very wealthy, but I mean, I haven't spent extensive enough time to really know enough about it. But definitely, like to most people, Beverly Hills kind of epitomizes like Hollywood culture.
Oh yeah, and then and that why the movie.
Except it's Beverly Hills does not epitomize anything because it's like mostly Iranian Jew.
Well, there is a scene in the film where she points out, "Oh, that's the Persian mafia." Like there is a reference to Iranians in the film, but it's a very they're kind of on the sideline.
Yeah, it's a very cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just the reality. The picture of Beverly Hills High in Clueless is it never looked that way ever. You know, there was a time when it was all white, and then there was a it's never had sort of the kind of diversity that they're portraying there of you know blacks sagging around that as far as I've known Beverly Hills for 40 years, and I've never seen anything like that around there.
Well, the funny thing is, you mentioned that, Aunt Charles. And the funny thing about the film is, she mentioned the Chinese boyfriend thing. In the movie, there's no interracial couples. Stacey Dash has a black boyfriend. Every guy she's obsessed with is white. The duff, if you will, that they take on the makeover, she's attracted to white guys. It's funny. There's no interracial couples in the movie.
Yeah, and if they're pushed,
there's a lot of but there's a lot of interracial sociability, and I think that was really. I think that's really the political program of it is that you know the races should all hang out together.
I think
strangely enough, that's not very realistic either because you know typically in every high school the races do tend to just naturally segregate.
Oh yeah,
they're
not sure.
It's like the brown bag
black
test. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's funny because there was a time, like like years ago, where it's like this whole multicultural and diverse paradigm was exactly like, all right, all the races could get along, but everyone has good fences, good neighbors, right? There was no, like, this cutting edge race mix stuff, right? And then all of a sudden, I think it maybe in the late 90s or somewhere within the late, like, mid 90s, where it became like, all right, you're black and you're white, you should have, like, black white interest, and this whole invention of white privilege came about, and it was really strange. And I think now today we see, like, the full, like, face fuck, like, it seems like everything now is, like, you know, black male, white female, at least that it tries to be like. But then authentically, in reality, it's usually white guys banging Asian chicks, and they just keep it really quiet about it. And they're...
Oh, yeah.
And basically what's happening was the black males, it's the highest divorce rate between black males and white females. It's just like a joke. It's a fucking joke. And most white girls are like, fuck black men, right?
But that's mm-hmm. but that's not really in the, you don't see that in the film that much.
Yeah, I'm just talking as, about
as Craig was saying, most of the couples are.
Well, we have to remember too when the movie came out. Like, so you had that sociability, and you have the sociability of the races, and even Stacey Dash's character Dion, they live this upper class Beverly Hills lifestyle. There's a big thing in that. If you remember shows like Family Matters or anything like that, one of the big pushes was that. We're all the same, and we may intermingle, we may have different skin colors, but everybody all the races basically live this middle class
white thing. White, and then lifestyle. The criticism was that they basically said, well, we're not white, and they basically now it's retarded because it's like that was the whole multicultural and diverse thing in the 80s. It was this naive ideal that everyone was going to succumb to being white. But then it turns out now everybody is an ethno-nationalist and everybody fucking hates each other.
So in a lot of ways, the Cher character is fairly conservative. If you compare her to the leading characters on teen shows today.
Well, I mean, just compared to Regina George, I mean, like, her whole raison d'etre is different. I mean, she walks around, she sees herself as a do-gooder in Clueless. Like, whether or not it's hooking up her teachers or doing makeovers on the other girls, it's very different from the Regina George character. I mean, the Regina George character is much more, I guess, economical in what she wants. It would be hard for me to picture kind of setting Cher up. I mean, I don't know about everyone else here, but did you notice that throughout the movie, there was almost kind of this implied thing with the black girlfriend and the black boyfriend that they were going to get married someday. And
you would not see that in a film today.
Yeah, that was totally absent from the Regina George character in Mean Girls and even the sidekicks. Like, they just frequently called each other whore throughout the entire film. And there was no implication or even explicit that they would get married at the end of the film. It's just totally absent.
And Cher, she obviously is very picky, but like I don't think
realizes that the loser guy who's hanging around the house is somehow good enough for her. Despite that, so it's almost despite herself, she accepts other people's flaws, which is not something you get from, I guess, the more shallow characters in Mean Girls.
Just for curiosity, sake, why would you call somebody studying to be an environmental lawyer a loser?
Oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't say that.
By the standards of their social circles,
yes, because he's the basic, he's the '90s slacker. Epitomize. He's '90s grunge. He's like the beginning of
Frederick Nietzsche, like, or something like that.
Right, and he's like, oh, we're planting a tree tomorrow. You know what I mean? That kind of. He was the Swipple of the day.
Oh yeah, it's true.
And the other thing about her character, though, you wouldn't see in film today is, like you said, she's picky. But I've had this debate with other people. Once again, I'm older. I'm 33 now, so I don't know what's going on with the youth. But when it seems like, even in the 90s, there was a big thing about having sex for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And she makes a big deal about it. even in shows like Dawson's Creek, or even Reese Witherspoon's character in
in Buffy the Vampire, Slayer and Veronica Mars.
I don't think she has sex at all in the film that I'm aware of.
No, she doesn't.
No, there's still a concept of people being virgins and it being an important rite of passage to lose the virginity. And these days, that seems to have been totally lost. And
yes,
you can't really find even 12 and 13 year old virgins are kind of rare.
Now it's like the ideal is like if the first time you have sex today, they just don't bring it up. It's like this kind of thing where it's like, oh, well, at 18, you're supposed to do that. And if you're not, you're a virgin loser. You know, like in these old films would be like, oh, sex is magical. Sex is this. Sex is – and they were pushing that narrative. Now it seems like that narrative is gone and it's more like go have sex so much that you can beat the record of somebody else. I don't know. It's weird.
Now we're all fuck buddies, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So
fuck buddies like since like elementary.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this whole thing of fuck buddies and devaluing sex as any kind of relationship value at all. It's like everybody. I mean, we're finally in. In the brave, we're really almost very close to Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, where everybody has sex with everybody.
Oh yeah, we're in that now.
It's like
we are Vimeir America. Vimeir America.
It's like the ideal that if you go off a new person, you assume that girl had sex with five other guys, and she assumes you fucked seven other girls, and we're like, oh, we're both promiscuous prostitutes, but we're not porn actresses or anything. We're just normie people. It's so strange and retarded. Tinder.
I haven't been on Tinder in a very long time. Well, I really enjoyed the kind of the other cult references that she kept making throughout the film. Like, I think she referred to the slacker as almost a Baldwin in one scene. In other places, like she was making literature references, but she was doing it very badly. Like she tried to quote A Tale of Two Cities. She just got that all wrong. I see it as a kind of breaking the fourth wall with her. Like she's more speaking to the audience about the past, and that's kind of why I see her as very memeable, even in this film, because it is unrealistic.
Loosely based on the Jane Austen novel Emma.
Oh, it is.
Loosely.
Very loosely. Very loosely.
I don't see much similarity myself, but I guess if that's also what they had in mind, then it's possible.
It's not even as close as saying that West Side Story is based on Romeo and Juliet.
There's that scene where the girls are excited that the guy has a picture of the new girl in her locker, and today that would be considered like really
very perverted. Like I remember when I was in high school, nobody did that. Like they had pictures in their locker, but not of girls they knew in the school. That would have sent you to the office if you had done that. you would have been in big trouble.
I remember what a time to be alive. Even in the late 90s, we still did that, had pictures of people we knew around.
I did that too, and yeah, you will get in trouble. I remember in high school, like almost 10 years ago, or even 8 years ago. But the ideal was like they had this Valentine's Day thing where you basically send the person's name and send who it's from and give them the rose, but you could not write secret admirer. I remember doing that to this one like really cute Chinese girl I liked at the time, and they were all like, no, you can't. You got to put your name. And you know,
Pill Eater.
Yeah.
Pill Eater, I don't want to be a one-upper, but I did something even worse. I actually wrote a love poem to someone and I gave it to them.
Okay.
I've done that.
I was going to lead up to that because I did write something on that, but they said the dickhead is this stupid cuck dickhead. There was no such thing as a cuck at the time, but this dickhead was all like, oh, you can't do that. And so I can't send to her because you got to get a form by both the teachers in your homeroom. That's fucked. And so it's like, what? That ruins. You basically had the teacher has to confirm it, and that teacher has to confirm it. You have to say it's from me to you. And it's so fucking, that ruins the whole purpose of the Valentine's. And my rose was never sent. It was sent to myself for fucking bullshit.
And we wonder why sexual relations are so fucked today.
Exactly.
My God.
Come on, just fucking let me talk to this girl, or, you know?
It's pretty bad when you look back on the 90s as a time of innocence. Holy shit.
Yeah, I feel like, oh, that sounds better. At least that sounds putting, like, I would have, like, tons of girls.
Yeah, our standards are pretty low.
Yeah, now if you fucking do it, you're some kind of fucking stalker, and you're evil or some shit, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of the interesting dichotomy. Like, traditional courtship is seen as stalkerish by today's standards.
Yeah.
I literally have, like, when I was, like, in my freshman year of college, I would literally have, like, a picture of this one girl I'd go out with, and I'd go with her for, like, 3 years and just have
Was she
like,
Asian?
Yeah, Robert, she was. But the thing was, the point is, like, I was into her. Like, I thought I was going to marry her or something. But now it's like, you can't do that because it's like, fuck, you know?
Well, the problem is, well, you're saying, with courtship, you mentioned Tinder. The way you courtship now is you swipe right, and that we've taken all emotion and privacy out of sex. Now it's just a purely physical act, like shaking a hand, as the cliche goes.
So, what do you think about the whole theme of matchmaking in the film?
Other than the fact that we can easily make a Jewish joke about it and say that she comes straight out of Fiddler on the Roof and she's playing Yenta. I think it's kind of charming that she would see the potential in them and that she would actually be a personal intermediate between them. I think that's kind of, sweet of her. I mean, like, if someone came up to me and said, oh, you actually have some kind of value, and I totally see you with that other person, I would actually have a much better opinion of her for actually taking the time to notice that. I think it's a good thing. I think it's dated, though. People don't usually do that, unless it's in a kind of bitter way. I tried sitting down with a friend of mine a little while ago, and she just wanted to complain about her relationship with a guy who wouldn't marry her. It wasn't even possible to really set her up with anybody.
And originally she does that to get a good grade, but then towards the end she does all these good deeds, and then it makes her feel good about herself.
Yes, and even during the party scene. Even during the party scene, she's trying to impress
the guy that you call a loser.
Yes.
She's saying
she's telling him, look at all the good deeds I'm doing for everyone. Yeah, exactly.
What do you think about the scene? The scene where her father's who's the lawyer is happy that she's a good negotiator. That scene was really funny.
It was funny to me because I could easily read it in another way. Just the fact that he doesn't care about her education so much as he sees a report card full of A's. No matter how she finagled it by hook or by crook, so I don't know. Maybe there's something kind of Jewish even about that, kind of Israeli Aryan. The fact that she could pull it off, that she had the spunk to turn the grade around.
Isn't that a picture from Clueless of Jeremy Sisto with an Asian girl?
Well, no, it was like they're doing those pictures with the one with the black guy, and they're doing this multiracial picture, and then the ugly duckling girl would get in, oh, put your hair in around her, right? Uh-huh. And, you know, those were like a picturesque, like, group, you know, getting all these weird, I don't know, I just think that's funny to mention that part with the picture taking.
But If I can go back to the last point we made about the whole A scene with the lawyer father, isn't that a great indictment of our upper classes today? There's nothing authentic about it. It's just about getting to the top, no matter, you know, no real education. The Ivy Leagues today are a fucking joke, and there's you're just there to learn the routine to get in and get to the government job or the corporate job without actually learning or growing as a person, if you will.
You're right.
Yeah, Zach.
But yeah, the ideal that you don't have to go to college and you can just make all this money and become like self-made without college education is now impossible today. Seems like you have to have a master's to basically be a dependent person on some weird Fortune 500 corporate cubicle job, or at least, you know, be accepted to the standards to get like 50 or 60 thousand a year, and supposedly that's considered in, and now that's like, I don't know, that doesn't sound like feasible at all either now.
Do you think about that, the debate scene in the beginning where she gives that refugee speech?
Well, I thought it was like total the kind of speech. It was the kind of speech I'd give if I was not being serious. I more like the teacher's reaction of just like, huh. I would have preferred it if we had got some kind of equally ridiculous rebuttal from, I guess, the right, but we just kind of had what I would interpret as a liberal parody, which I found very amusing. Like, she really is clueless just based on that scene.
Well, but I've actually seen liberals put out that meme on Facebook, even though it was meant as kind of a satire. People put it out all the time.
It's been much celebrated recently because as if it were anti-Trump propaganda. It is so retarded. I mean, it's a totally flawed statement any way you look at it, and it's just if you start parsing it and pulling it apart, it really sets the tune for how pure propaganda, Clueless really is compared to these other two movies that actually do have a somewhat worthwhile plot to them.
Because you would say that the other two are far superior.
I would say they're far superior. I think Clueless is just trash, basically. And that speech, if you take it apart, it could become a very good conservative reaction, because what's the difference between the Haitians and people coming to a party? The big difference is that people coming to a party, even if people crash a party, they're going to leave. They're not there forever. And so, people crash a party. You give them lunch. You give them dinner. You give them some booze. That's fine. But they're going to be gone by dawn. And if not, you know, you're going to call the cops and say, hey, these people are, you know, they're trespassing. And so, I mean, it's a huge...
Even the film implies it was a ridiculous statement.
Well, maybe the film did. It was mainly that the whole film is sort of consistent with that. And then I've seen it so many times recently quoted with great approval and saying that this is the answer to Donald Trump, and the whole thing aggravates me tremendously that people take stupidity as wisdom. That's where we've really come in the modern world is, 20 the stupidity of 20 years ago is now taken as wisdom, and you know the words on the Statue of Liberty, which had no authority from any, they were never endorsed by any political body or any political process, you know, they are not law, and they keep quoting them as if that's some sort of a Jewish immigrant's statement is somehow law now, as if that really defines Emma Lazarus's word somehow defines the American spirit. I mean, she is not Thomas Jefferson.
But it just shows, it's a great indictment of the modern left that they take this stupidity, something that's obviously meant to satire that nonsense, and they take it for real. But these are the same people in the wake of Trump that are taking Harry Potter as a political scripture. You know what I mean? It's just it's indictment of how dumb the modern left is. I mean, I remember when it was announced Beyonce was pregnant and with twins, they were like, oh, Beyonce is the Messiah with the twins that with Luke and Leia, with the new Luke and Leia. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, has the modern left stopped developing after age 7? What the fuck's going on?
I think they failed at the meme wars, so they're really desperate to come up with something.
But it has nothing to do with the clues, but I have to add this. Did you guys see through WikiLeaks that the CIA, the deep state, actually created a meme warfare department, and the trolls online actually fucking beat them? Like, the trolls actually beat the deep state.
Huh. That's awesome.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I read about it, but I don't exactly know what the word on it is.
Well, I think it's more organic than anything the CIA can come up with. I mean, these were just people originally talking on anonymous forums like 4chan that originally came up with that. And the more and more people who shared it and added content to it, it just kind of grew. I don't think you could pay people to come up with something like that.
What do you think about the meme magic potential that Alicia Silverstone has?
Well, in terms of the fact that she's a cult classic, you could Photoshop her into things, and just like Keck, if people are in the know, when they share a meme, it could spread. So there could be some potential there. I mean, a lot of the memes that people have created, they just don't make any sense unless you know the history behind it. Then people get it. I see her as a kind of quirky, ordinary girl, really. And in the case of American Beauty, I just think the actresses are just chosen to be just a little too cookie cutter for me, but just for my tastes. So I would Photoshop someone who came across as a little bit more normal. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean like she's average normal, but she's more, amenable.
The one thing I would say about her being a meme is that there's a big nostalgia for the 90s right now. Just like I remember 10 years ago when I was in college, there was a big 80s nostalgia. Oh, yeah. Guys remember that? In mid-2000s, there was a big 80s nostalgia. But I would say about American Beauty, I think the end of American Beauty is the important part in that it's a very liberal movie, very liberal movie. Let's not joke ourselves about that. But at the very end, the liberalism, Kevin Spacey's character is weird. He does all this stuff to impress this teenage girl. He quits his job. He basically becomes this baby boomer that won't grow up throughout the movie. But at the very end, he doesn't sleep with the girl, and he's looking at a photo of his family. And I think it's a great right-wing conservative statement in the sense that this grown man has realized how ridiculous he has become, in the sense that he's trying to relive the baby boomer refused to grow up. And what's important is his family. And even the wife, who's been cheating on the whole movie.
Why do you say that American Beauty is a left-wing propaganda? I mean, it's the gay guy who kills him.
No, it's a right-wing propaganda in the sense the gay guy kills him.
Oh, are you talking about the neighbor who thinks that his son's giving him a blowjob?
Well, I mean, the wife is plotting to kill him, but she can't do it.
Back to the theme of the crush, where he kind of resists the temptation of Mina Savari in the same way that in the crush Nick Elliott resists the temptation of Alicia Silverstone.
You've changed my mind, actually. I was thinking about it because I'm thinking of how the military guy is actually gay inside, but at the end it's a big... Actually, you've changed my mind now. I think about the end of American Beauty is a big refutation of everything that came before.
Yeah, it is. And the big problem with the ambiguity of American Beauty and is, you know, the idea that the American ideal is somehow ugly and has become trash. And I think that's really the core message of that movie, is that, you know, the dream has somehow turned into the trash that the movie starts out with. You know, it's kind of a warning, I think, of what has become real. And in that sense, I think it's a very brilliant conservative movie.
Charles, do you have any thoughts on The Babysitter?
Well, again, I'd say of the three movies we're talking about tonight, it is the most socially real of all, because people do live fantasy lives, and you know, the reality that they're living is totally filtered through their fantasies. And I think that it's a totally brilliant movie. Somebody mentioned it has the highest artistic value of any of these three that we're talking about, including Clueless. I mean, I think Clueless is just, I had forgotten Clueless when it came out 20 years ago, and I had forgotten a lot of details. I had even forgotten that opening thing about the refugees, in part because I had been working on a case involving Haitian refugees, and I was so pissed off that it came up in a movie.
She's talking about, like, she doesn't approve of drug use, and then she comments on how guys her age dress really trashy, but then she falls for the guy who's well-dressed, but he turns out to be gay.
Well, I mean, I actually know at least that was totally realistic. I will tell you that much. I mean, I have known at least 24 girls who've gone through exactly that, of being attracted to men who were, I mean, that was a very common problem in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, is, you know, before it was just totally okay to announce that you're gay. You know, they would not know that men were gay, and they'd really be attracted to their style. And the converse is kind of true too, because back a million years ago, I was elected best dressed man on campus, if you can imagine people caring about such a thing, 2 years in a row, and some men suspected that I was gay. not women, but men. They thought that only a homosexual would bother to dress up. So basically, to a woman's standard. It was a really strange psychology. But
that's kind of the whole premise of like James O'Meara's book, that in our culture, being well dressed and sophisticated is equated with being homosexual.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of the decay, I guess, is that masculinity has become devalued, and it's only associated with the working class, when it used to be, you know, it used to be that being a gentleman was an extremely manly thing to be, and being well dressed was, and that's just one of the values that has totally gone by the wayside, is that only low class men are really masculine. It's really weird how things get twisted around. But
if I may add, I think that's it's a reaction against the blatant, like you were saying, like you think of back in the day, guys like JFK who were bladesmen, getting Marilyn Monroe, types like that, very well dressed, or even, you know, Hollywood stars like Cary Grant or guys like that were always extremely well dressed, very sophisticated. But with you would know better, in the rise of the 70s and 80s, and especially in the late 90s and 2000s, where everything just became gay, gays exploded, men were just reacted against anything that would label them gay. So the rise of Jack Donovan has actually talked about this, how male bonding has kind of died. Now you have the stupid bro hug and all this, where guys can't be embrace those finer things in life, if you will, without the stigma of being gay, because of the rise of public homosexuality.
Well, I don't know if the writers intended this, but I remember sitting on the couch with my father years ago watching Spartacus, and we were watching exactly that very same scene that he was watching with her, where the character Crassus is talking about the pearls and the oysters, and how he prefers both pearls and oysters. I don't know if the writers intended for that to be a homosexual reference.
Totally. I mean, that was actually edited. That was edited out of the original general release. You didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that. I watched it with that scene in it, and I asked my dad, "What does that mean?" And he actually explained to me what was actually going on between Crassus and the Tony Curtis character, which is why I knew the innuendo when I saw Clueless. I was like, okay, they're signaling something to us about this guy.
Count Fosco, you were saying that there is an anti-snob message to the film. Can you explain that?
Well, just the fact that, you know, she approaches her new friend, the new classmate, and doesn't kind of put her in a separate clique, but makes her over. I don't even know what that entails, since I've never done that to anyone. But I thought that was very anti-snob.
Oh, as opposed to the makeover in Mean Girls.
Well, in Mean Girls, they wanted someone to join their specific clique. I think it was different because they didn't change the quirkiness of the new girl at all. They pretty much let her be herself. They didn't have any ridiculous rules about what she could wear and when.
I would disagree.
Go ahead, Craig.
If I can. I'm sorry. I would disagree if I can, because they originally do it to make her over into one of them. They take this, you know, flannel wearing skater girl and try to make her one of them. And she originally tries to hook him up with the popular guy and tells him not to go with that because that would hurt her public image as now one of them with the after the makeover.
Mm.
And it's only through the development of her character. It's development of her character. So you're 50% right. Originally, she does it to make the girl one of them. And it is a snobbish message. But at the end, the whole movie is about her losing that snobbishness. That's why she goes for this pre-Swipple college snob over the popular guy. And it's her breaking down that snobbishness.
So you're saying it's part of the character development?
Yes.
I guess I'm just more sold on Alicia. I find it hard to believe that Alicia has ulterior motives. She's just too cute. I'm
you
fooled.
Watched The Crush?
Yes, I watched The Crush, but you know, I'm under her spell. She's pretty cute.
Huh. Oh, you were saying you also like the ending where the scene where they're all in pink clothing and they're in the like the poolside with the Roman columns.
Yeah, kind of psychedelic. It's kind of in keeping with the whole vaporwave aesthetic. It's kind of like a knockoff of real things. Like, it's not real Roman columns, obviously. And even the Galleria Mall, it kind of looks fake, but it kind of has.
Are you talking about from the movie or from the
picture? From the movie. From the movie. The whole fight scene, for instance, in the Galleria Mall. Yeah.
The one where the gay guy saves that girl from being thrown, like they were like pulling her.
Yeah. Rail. Yeah. For some reason, he has this, he still has this masculinity in him, which we might not have expected.
What do you think about the scene where she ends up in the valley and you have these different like LA landmarks? Like there's that circus liquor where there's that really, like the clown, the neon clown looking down on her with that kind of sinister stare.
I would put that in a more horror type scene, but you know, I guess the guy driving off is kind of horrific almost. I don't know what to make of that. I mean, like I would put that in a kind of a darker movie almost. That whole kind of clown aesthetic.
Yeah, I mean, you have like the theme of like the clown, like, and it does also remind me. I mean, I've driven by circus liquor in the daytime. I wonder if it was based on the circus in Vegas.
I don't know. I've never been to California. Has anyone here been to Vegas?
Yeah, I have.
Well, I guess it's possible.
I have an idea for the person.
Well, I think it's also a very white scene in this sense, in that she's a girl, she's this upper class white girl, and she has her real, she has her, you know, her safe black friends are also part of the upper class of Yale. And now she's in the ghetto. Now she's in the real black world, and she's freaking out about it, if you will.
Well, it's supposed to be the valley. I mean, the area she's in, she's at a party. I guess it's just some kind of middle. I mean, people have traditionally kind of, the valley was this kind of middle class suburban area. But I mean, people on the west side kind of look down on the valley, except for the expensive, like, hilly parts. But also with the scene where she gets stranded, that getting stranded in the valley is a bad thing because there's no, like, decent transit in L.A., so if you don't have a car in the valley, you're screwed, especially back then before Uber.
Good to know. I've never been to L.A., so I wouldn't even put that together.
Before we wrap up the show soon, is there anything else you'd like to add about Clueless?
Not really.
I was just going to just to reiterate that I think it's a complete propaganda movie, and I do not get why it was such a big hit or why it was so popular. I don't.
It's because of the meme magic of Alicia Silverstone.
Yes, Robert is right.
Yeah, I was just going to say I love the fact that throughout the movie she's calling everyone else clueless. I thought that was a nice touch. Even though she herself is very clueless, throughout the movie she is calling everyone else clueless. Like, she repeats it like 3 or 4 times. That was just the icing on the cake. It's always the clueless person who thinks everyone else is clueless.
And anything else you want to say about The Babysitter?
Fine movie. The best of this Alicia Silverstone trio by far.
Okay. Well, while I was watching Leisure Suit Larry, you know, the video game, I thought was very amusing. I found an attractive blonde, which I thought resembled Alicia,
I could
easily imagine putting Alicia's quirky little voice into her mouth. I think that would be very meme magical, and Alicia would totally rock that little cartoon body in Leisure Suit Larry. And she would completely reject Larry, of course.
Huh. Yeah, I saw that. That's hilarious. We'll have to do a whole another show about Leisure Suit Larry. Yeah, so it's been a great show. Obviously, Alicia Silverstone has a lot of meme magic. Check out those films you're talking about, and thanks Charles Lincoln, Pilliter, Craig Langley Jr., and Count Fosco.
Thank you again, Robert.
And thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you for having me on, Robert, again. Thank you.